I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's cloudy skies over West London. Jules, we've got a packed show today. I know I say that a lot, but this is a weekend where like everything happened. It just wouldn't end. You've got Real Madrid in a completely wild game. Yeah. You've got Barcelona being held. You've got United being held. You've got Cristiano not starting in Serie A. Yeah. You've got worrying scenes, of course, in Nice, between them and Marseille, the pitch invasion. We have a ton to get through, so let's start in the Premier League, obviously, Arsenal and Chelsea. All those doubts, Lukaku, blah, blah, blah. I know it's been 90 minutes. And I know there's now a school of thought saying that. But who was ever doubting Lukaku?
Yeah.
Okay. All the Muppets. Oh, Solskjaer's right to get rid of him. He can't trap a bag of cement. Oh, he's fat. Oh, you know, whatever. Okay, look. Whatever it was before, it was before, right? Yeah. He comes in. He road-graded Arsenal.
Yeah, okay. This is an Arsenal team, and we will come back to them later.
No, just talk about Lukaku. Let's talk about the positives, and then we get to the negatives.
Yeah, but the positive is also that he was facing a defense of Rob Holding and Pablo Mari, where with hardly any protection in front of the back four. So I think as a first game back after 2 years away, I think this was perfect for him because he was very dominant. Right. There might be other games where the defending on him is a bit stronger and tougher and all of that, but that's another story. But I thought he was fantastic, and I was there. And I promise you, the feeling of power and of domination, I've rarely seen a player just walking on a game like this. And he was just, you could tell. And I think not just the goal, he could have had a hat-trick easily. I think there's a couple of times where the ball could have come, didn't come, or came too late. There's obviously the big save by Leno. But everything else that he brought to that team, and even the leadership, you know, and just all of that, the cheering from the Chelsea fans in the corner at the Emirates who sang his name pretty much 70% of what they were chanting, it was just fantastic.
I was just impressed, apart from Lukaku, with Tuchel, in the sense that You bring in a 100 million striker or whatever, but it's still different, right? If you replace Timo Werner, who is small and quick, not suggesting Lukaku's slow, but Lukaku's not as quick as Timo Werner, with Lukaku, you're going to have knock-on effects. Obviously, he also changed Pulisic, who tested positive COVID, with Havertz. But they got everything in stride. There was no adjustment. It's almost like the rest of the team was very much like clockwork. Mm. I thought they took the 2-0 lead. I thought they were comfortable in possession. They were comfortable when they pushed on the accelerator and tried to put pressure on Arsenal. I think they look really, really good, and they look really, really good really, really quickly. And that's what I find impressive about
Tuchel. This is still the beginning, you know? And I think imagine once Tuchel and Lukaku and everybody else really implement the new pattern with Lukaku in the team, so you can play him with his back to goal and he will hold up the ball so well and then get you into the game like on the first goal that he scored, that he starts that way. But they did it, but they could do it even better and more efficiently. And when they add that to already everything else that Tuchel has built for the last 8 months, they're going to be even stronger.
You know what I'm dying to know? And I don't think we'll have the answer to this until Christmas. I want to know, and I'm going to go with I'm going to channel my inner Orson Welles, Harry Lime, who is the third man? Because if it's Lukaku and it's Mount, we know that. Who is going to be the third guy?
There's no debate. And you saw it yesterday.
Who is it?
Havertz.
It's
every
Havertz.
Day. But yesterday.
The Pulisic fanboys are going to come after
Pulisic
you.
Pulisic is great. And Pulisic will have a lot of game time. And Pulisic can play wide. And he can obviously replace either Mount or Havertz. Right.
But the first choice long term is Havertz, you think?
I think
in
so.
That role.
Yeah, and yesterday, they worked so well, the three of them.
Makes sense to me in many ways. I think Havertz still has a high, high ceiling. Mm. Arsenal, wow. I was struck before the game. Arteta came out and said, well, you know, they're trying to break our spirit. Our spirit won't be broken. I don't know if it's who they are. Maybe he's talking about the results. This was not a good performance. Mitigating circumstances.
Of course.
A ton of absentees.
Yeah. Half of their team. This is your first home game. I don't understand the booing at the end by the Arsenal fans, by the whole Emirates Stadium. This is a weakened Arsenal team because of all the players missing, right? Against the champions of Europe who've already had such a well-drilled, well-organized machine. On top of that, they've added one of the top five strikers in the world. Arsenal cannot compete with Chelsea right now. It's impossible. So what did you expect? For me, this game was everything that we expected before. Chelsea were much better. Lukaku was dominant. They won. It was an easy win. And in that kind of Arsenal team, the shape they were with the players that they had on the pitch, there's nothing much more they could have done.
I think like, obviously you lose to Chelsea, and if they lose to, they've got City next, so obviously, you know, on paper that looks like an L as well, but who knows, because, you know, we saw City first lose at Spurs.
Yeah, it wouldn't be.
Fair to boo after Brentford for obvious reasons, I think. I think this is still evolving. I don't think Arteta is actually under immediate pressure from above.
No.
Because I would hope, and Josh, if you're watching this, and I know you watch regularly, you know that this is down to recruitment, this is down to Arteta. There's a lot of different factors coming together. And if you're going to make a change, and there might come a time when you need to make a change.
Yeah, of course.
I think you have to have a more comprehensive, holistic approach and really assess who did what and when. All right, Jose, I want to be fair here. So let's remind yourselves of the Arsenal absentees, right?
Yeah.
There's some that are acceptable. You spoke off air of the six new signings. Okay, you can't have Ramsdale as an absentee because it's not immediately obvious that Ramsdale is the starter, right?
No.
Okay, so at right back, I think they brought in, I don't know who his plan is. Is Nuno Tavares his right back? Is it Bellerin?
No.
We know it's not Cedric Soares, but
left-footed. So I think Bellerin would start. Right,
so after all this to do, he's going, his contract, blah, blah, blah. He can legitimately complain that Bellerin didn't start. Yeah? Anyone would say we started.
But so, I think he will be your starter right back.
Okay. Yeah. Center backs, I'm assuming it's Gabriel and Ben White.
Yeah.
Who are out for different reasons. Ben White tested positive, right?
Positive, yes.
Gabriel has some long-running injury. Yeah. Kieran Tierney came off, but he's your starter at left back, right? In midfield, I noticed that the... Thomas Partey's not around again.
He's injured.
Yes, he's injured.
Yeah.
Shock.
Yeah.
And
Granit Xhaka.
And obviously Granit Xhaka with Partey would be your starting.
Yeah.
Right. Granit Xhaka was there.
Yeah, okay. He was there, yeah.
At least in spirit. Now, you're going to say Emile Smith-Rowe, Wono, Odegaard. I think it's very close if you're going to argue those two, yeah?
No, I think those two will play together.
You think they'll play together with Saka, right?
Yeah, they're very
And Saka
different.
Was there. Okay, so the only guy you can't count there is Odegaard. And then your center forward is Alba, who came off the bench.
Or Lacazette, yeah.
Or Lacazette, the guy with the expiring contract.
Yeah, but
so
he's still there.
It seems to me that if we are going to argue about the absentees, there is a case at the back.
Yeah.
There's less of a case in midfield and going forward.
Definitely.
And what concerned me a little bit, you touched upon this earlier, and I think a lot of people pointed it out. It seemed to me they were unprepared against Lukaku in the sense that, okay, admittedly, Lukaku is twice the size of Pablo Mari and he's strong and he's intelligent and blah, 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 right? But the number of times he receives the ball with his back to goal, with the ball coming along the line, along the ground, this is what gets me, right? It's one thing you lump it up, and okay, he wins an aerial battle, holds the ball up, fine. Duncan Ferguson used to do that. But the ball comes to him along the ground. That tells me that your midfield or your or whoever's pressing isn't pressing effectively.
Yeah.
As well as the fact that the defenders get, you know, get run over.
Yeah.
That's something that shouldn't happen. That's something that you should be prepared for. That, to me, is the biggest concern, because I can give Arteta a pass for the guys who aren't there and whatever else, but that's an issue.
I think it was an issue. I think the press was a problem at times, the way they're pressed. I think the desire was there, and I think the players were motivated, but the way they're pressed was an issue. And yeah, I think it was too easy for Lukaku. You could argue that the back four could have been protected more. And that pass from, let's say, Kovacic to Lukaku or Jorginho to Lukaku should have been prevented by even someone just moving in front of the back four as a holding midfielder. The problem is neither Xhaka or Lokonga are a holding midfielder, but you could still make them be in that position.
It's not rocket science. You don't need to turn into Busquets, right? You either defend high or you defend low.
Yeah.
Right? Both Xhaka and Lokonga, I'm sure, have done both things throughout their career.
Yeah, definitely. And in the second half, they did it a little bit better because Lukaku had a bit less of that ball in the way that he received it in the first half, for example, that led to the first goal and even to the second goal. But so this is an issue because this should have been corrected during the game. As should have been corrected, the fact that Reece James spent his afternoon on his own, on his right-hand side, especially the first half. And that's how he set up the first goal and scored the second one. And I don't understand okay, we know exactly what Chelsea are going to do. One of their assets is, which is attract you to one side and then obviously switch the play to the other side very quickly to that wing back. And then, yeah, they score the first goal and then you don't rectify something to not make it happen a second time. And 10 minutes later, the second it happens again and they score the second goal. So I'm like, okay.
I was going to get to this because, you know, whether you play whatever formation you play, right, you've got, you still have the same number of players as the opposition. So when you play against a side with attacking or with wing backs, you effectively have a 2-on-1, right? Every time.
Because unless your wide players are very, very defensive minded and come and help, and then you're on 2v2.
Well,
but it's tricky.
But it's not rocket science.
No, but it's a lot of effort to Saka and Pepe, who are not used to defend that much, to follow Reece James and Marcos Alonso pretty much everywhere. And then the problem is, if you want them to press and go high on Rudiger on one side and Azpilicueta on the other side, every time there's a gap somewhere and you're just a little bit late. And that's why I think the press, in the end, didn't work.
I think there's a question too for the fullbacks, especially with Tierney in this, because I don't know if it was Tierney's decision making or it's the instructions he's been given. Obviously, he's very good as an attacking fullback, and he's a good defensive fullback. We've seen that too. He can't do both things at once. Those situations where he squeezes inside to help his center backs, he's following instructions, I presume, but somebody needs to react and cover that space. I would assume it should have been Granit Xhaka.
Xhaka is the one that comes inside next to Pablo Mari, and then Tierney is still free.
One or the other.
Yeah, definitely.
Those are defensive movements that didn't show up. And that is what I mean when I say they're unprepared.
I don't think it was perfect, but let's not forget, this is Chelsea again. You know, they didn't do that against... No, I mean, forget the Brentford game. But this game, this is Chelsea. There's no competition there, Gab. You know, this is... And being there at the game, you could see already, but it was just... It was just a team that is so good, so well prepared. I know exactly what to do, where the ball is on the right. Everybody knows on the millimeter where they have to be and what's coming next. With this Arsenal team, he's still looking for a style, looking for a formation, looking for a starting 11. So I think it's just a bit harsh to go too hard on Arteta's tactics or the mistakes or this, because this is a team that is going to beat a lot of the team. For me, Arsenal should be like West Ham last season. West Ham didn't win a single game against the teams that finished top four, which are the four best teams in the league. And yet, they were so good against everybody else apart from that top four. And Arsenal, this should be the mindset. You can't compete with Liverpool, United, City and Chelsea if you're Arsenal this season, even with your full strength starting 11. Yet, you should be able to beat everybody else and finish fifth like West Ham did. Six.
I'll go back to this. When you talk about what the mindset is, you're talking about in terms of results. I think the mindset, evidently, a year ago, should have been, let's rip up the blueprint and let's build for the future. I know I've said this a million times.
Yeah.
I think I got abuse when I said, oh, they shouldn't have signed. Why are they signing Willian when, you know, you've got Saka and you're stuck with Pepe and you've got, you know, and like, oh, because you need squad depth. Right, if you're going to challenge for the Champions League, you know, you'll be watching Champions League on TV for a while. Go with youth. Go decisively. Youth. It looks like they've veered in that direction
I think
this summer.
Yeah, that's the idea.
So, but they still have this issue of all these players. Willian is still there.
Yeah.
And obviously, you lose Laka on a free in a year's time.
Yeah.
Hey, of those three guys, do you think all three will still be there come September 1st?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell because Lacazette is the obvious one to move, but then. He's unwell. So
he's unwell now. I don't know if there's a market. It's not a market, but for strikers of his age right now, you know, what kind of club that can afford his wages plus a transfer fee right now in Europe can come for Lacazette. So, okay, not in England, I think. So then you're looking at Spain, Atletico Madrid, who missed on Rafa Mir, for example, missed out on Rafa Mir, might not get Vlahovic, for example. I don't know. That could be a possibility.
They've been linked with Mateus Cunha, right? Could you see a Lacazette if they show up with 10 million for Lacazette?
Yeah.
Do you think about it? I would.
But then the thing is,
if you're going to extend him,
But I still think that for what Arteta wants his number 9 to do and, you know, be involved and drop and play and
Lacazette is the right guy.
I think he's a complete striker. That
then you extend him and then you deal Alba, because you're not going to play Lacazette and Alba together, are you? That ship has sailed.
Well, I think, I'm not sure if Aubameyang can really play on the left-hand side. So you play him centrally, yeah. So there's only room for one.
So then Arteta's going to have to find something different for a centre forward to do, because Alba has a different skill set from Lacazette.
Yeah, definitely.
Like I said, all these things, there's a technical director there. Right?
Yeah.
Who's an ex-footballer?
But there was a lot of mistakes made in the past too, Gab. You know, it's not just on Edu and Arteta. There was a lot of stuff in the way the squad was managed years previously, not just in the last 18 months or 12 months.
I guess what I have issue with is the mistakes that they made since these people have arrived.
Yeah, no.
You know, the ones before, you can't help, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not the fault of Wenger that Alba was given a new three-year deal.
No,
it's not the fault of Wenger that Lacazette wasn't renewed. It's not the fault of Wenger that Willian was signed or that David Luiz was signed, right?
So
all these things together, or Thomas Partey. What are you thinking there? You know, I don't know. I think
what you mean.
I think the direction of travel, if Arteta is committed to youth, is the right one. I know some Arsenal fans freak out. I don't think they should freak out, even if they get hammered by City. Two games after that are Norwich and Burnley.
Yeah.
I don't even, you know, last night on the show we were saying, well, he'll need 6 points. I think he'll expect 6 points. But for me, if I were a Kroenke, I would say, I don't need 6 points. I need performance in those two, right?
You need to see the direction.
I need some points, but I need to see the direction of travel.
Yeah, definitely.
But on the Chelsea end, you seem very bullish. Are they now favourites for the title?
So I've put them as my favourite. I think they're going to win the title now that Lukaku is there. I was speaking to Jean-Luc Haribar, who does the commentary for French TV, for Canal Plus, who used to be a player, and now he's a really good player, and he used to be a coach as well. And he said, like, every time I was Chelsea, I'm amazed by the work that Tuchel has been doing. Only let's not forget, he only arrived in January.
Yeah.
And I do think that when I watch them play, and again, it's Arsenal, so next weekend against Liverpool on Saturday, this is a hell of a game for them, and let's see how they do in that game, and 100%. But I still think it's fascinating to see the work that he's done, those players. When you think that you're still on the bench, you had so much talent. I mean, the depth in the squad. We talked about squad building for Arsenal and the mistake that were made before, or now, or recently. But I do think that at times Chelsea don't get the credit they deserve. And of course, they didn't. Marina Granovskaya and everybody involved in that club didn't always make the right choices. But when you look at their squad now, the depth and the quality and the quantity even, you're thinking like, wow. And then you see a kid like Livramento being man of the match for Southampton against United. And he would not even have come near that team at Chelsea. So you think like, wow, they clearly do a lot of things right. And I guess they get the credit and the rewards that they deserve by winning those games. And I think that if they're not champions, they would be very, very close from it for me.
I think one of the keys with Chelsea at this from that side, because they have accumulated a ton of players, not just the young players, many of whom have been loaned out, others will be loaned out. And these are very, very talented players. I mean, you know, even guys in other teams, like Jamal Musiala was a Chelsea captain.
Yeah, of course.
Seems crazy.
Declan Rice.
They're going to have to monetize some of these. I do think...
Well, more than a Mark Gay at 20 million, more than a Gallagher will leave next summer for the same amount of money. So what do you mean, monetize more than that even?
Well, because these people like Danny Drinkwater, people like Ross Barkley are there, right? I think they want to go further. Now, Emerson's gone. We're going to talk about him a little bit later. Bakayoko is likely to move as well. We're going to talk about him later. But they're in a situation right now where there's no money elsewhere. So you're talking about continuously loaning these guys. Rather than actually getting money back. That is the one thing that I wonder if at some point, you know, chickens come home to roost financially. We don't know what financial fair play is going to look like. We don't know. There's a lot that we don't know. That would be my one concern. There's something Chelsea need to be mindful of. And having guys who are just priced out of the market because they make too much money, right? So you can't sell
them.
The other thing I was just wondering about this, and we've had a ton of praise for Tuchel and what he's done defensively. I do look at this defense, though, and you can look at it both ways. You can say Tuchel's a genius because Kurt Zouma a couple years ago was a bit of a laughing stock, right?
Yeah.
Andreas Christensen was considered soft and weak and a bit effete, right? Rudiger couldn't get into the team under Lampard and still has an extended contract as far as I know. Azpilicueta, after having been great, looked older and is older now. He's 33. he's doing it with this group of defenders. And I know Chalaba played on game week one. That if we went back a couple of years and I said, oh, Chelsea are going to win the Champions League and be Jules' favorites for the Premier League with this group of players, people would have laughed at
you. Yeah, definitely.
So are these actually good players, or is Tuchel doing some smoke and mirrors work with these guys?
Both, I think. I really do, both. And I think I said to you when he signed, the people forgot in Paris as well that he made that team really
Good. Thiago Silva, I was leaving out. Again, all the love in the world for Thiago Silva, but he's 36.
Yeah, 55. So it's, and I do think that he's doing great. And again, I think the back three helps and certainly suits this squad and the way he wants to play perfectly. And I just think that he finds the right formula, and also to know exactly what to do with those players and what to expect from them. You don't expect the same from Christensen than you do with Rudiger or with Azpilicueta or Chalobah or Zuma. And I just think that he's so good at getting the best of what those players can do, more than any other, not any other manager, but a lot of other managers who sometimes would ask, and you feel like it, ask something from a player that he can't really do. So he ends up by, you know, trying to overplay or trying to do things that is out of his comfort zone completely. And I think that's, again, counterproductive completely. But the Chelsea team, everybody seems, even I look at Kovacic, and there was a time where even Chelsea fans were, oh yeah, Kovacic, yeah, he's not a bad player, but, you know, he's a Serb, he can come off the... Kovacic is an amazing player. He's an amazing, whether you start him or he comes on as a Serb or whatever. But I watched him yesterday, and the intelligence, the movement, the momentum, the energy.
That pass to James?
I was like, wow. And he potentially can only be a Serb because Kante and Jorginho could well be your first two choices in those positions. And then Kovacic would spend most of the season on the bench.
Jorginho, by the way, the other guy who was rubbish, not good enough, too slow, too fouling people. Yeah.
It's not a dig at Lampard at all. He has his ideas. He tried, and some worked, some didn't work. But I'm like, wow, this is so much the next step. I think it's scary.
They do, I think, need to start thinking a little bit further down the line. They've been linked with Jules Koundé. I would assume, you know, they would probably look at midfield and be like, all right, maybe Billy Gilmore develops, maybe he doesn't. But, you know, a couple of years down the line, they're going to need a new set of midfielders.
Yeah,
right? Chalaba, I think people have told me his future is actually in midfield. And then obviously you're looking to make signings and move forward.
Definitely.
But for the time being, I'm with you. I think they certainly...
The future looks really bright.
The future does look really, really solid. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough Chelsea. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Levante Real Madrid battled to a 3-3 draw in an epic game that left me exhausted. Jules, take it away. Make sense of this.
Wow, it was fantastic. I mean, not so much the first half where I thought Real Madrid were in control. They scored early with Gareth Bale.
Come on, Isco.
Isco played because there was no Modric and no
Isco Cruz. Was really good, though.
Isco
it's
was
the
good
Carlo
in the
effect.
Field. But the problem is with Isco, because he hadn't played for so long, and because when you play midfield like this, there's a lot of activity, let's put it that way, to do, he tires up. And he tires up very quickly in the second half. And then Levante took control, really, and played really well between, let's say, the start of the second half and up to the hour mark. They scored 2 goals in 11 minutes. Because I think they exposed also the fragilities that we see in this Real Madrid defense. It's a bit too exposed. It was certainly too easy for Levante to break through that defense.
So serious defensive errors on each of those goals, would you... I mean,
Yeah, of course.
The second one was a tremendous finish.
It's an incredible
volley. But again, he's wide open because I think Lucas Vázquez doesn't come across.
Yeah.
The first one was just a mess of people falling over. And this is my concern a little bit. This is Casemiro, this is Nacho, this is David Alaba. These are very experienced players.
Yeah, but I think Casemiro on his own
switched off a little, yeah?
And also needs a bit of help, which I don't think Valverde and Isco gave too much defensively in that Estonia at the start of the second half. And then they've got so much firepower that you bring on Vinicius, which was already a super sub last weekend in the win, as in the sense that he scored when he came on, and then rescued the team, scored two goals, and the third one for Real Madrid, exceptional sort of little dink.
Yes, he meant it. Yes,
and he meant
all
it outside
there.
Of his right foot. Takers, proper takers. So good win, but I think I wonder if this is a bit what we're going to see this season.
Good draw, not good win. Careful there. Because those are two points dropped.
But I think I wonder if that's what we're going to see, where they're more fluid with the ball, but defensively maybe.
I think they
need
to tighten up defensively. I think they were unlucky conceding those goals. Doesn't change the fact that they were really, really poor after the break for a good half hour.
Yeah, they were.
And Hazard also, I think, kind of went backwards too, relative to the first game.
Yeah, that's true.
Also
a
concern.
Yeah. Wojciech Szczęsny made two blunders, which meant that Juve were held to a 2-2 draw with Udinese on the first game of the season. Gab, the talking point, though, is all about Cristiano Ronaldo, who started on the bench and only came on later in the game.
Yeah, so this is a weird one because when you find out on the day that Cristiano's going to be on the bench, when the day before and the day before that, there's no sense of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to buy the idea like, oh, yeah, no, he's a little behind with his fitness, not where he wants to be. Look, you know, somebody pointed out, oh, look, Chiellini's on the bench too, like, and he's a European champion. I'm like, yes, but Chiellini's a million years old. You've got Bonucci and De Ligt starting. You know, it's just slightly different, right? Juve were very, very quick to quash it. Inevitably, a whole bunch of people reported, oh, this is about assessing the situation.
Yeah.
However, it's slightly different because it's not a case where Cristiano doesn't play because you don't want him to get hurt and ruin a possible transfer, right? Because he did come on. He scored a winner, which ultimately got chalked off because of one of those tiny offsides.
Yeah.
It was a correct offside.
Yeah,
it still shows that he's fit and motivated and he looked happy. But inevitably, this story, which started with our pal Edu Aguirre in El Chiringuito, isn't going away. Does he stay? Does he go? Nedved said, 100% he's staying. So, Nedved, you don't make the decisions.
Yeah.
Shh. But I think more important was Juventus players are saying, well, he's told us he's staying.
Yeah.
They're convinced that he's going to stay. If he does go, do you like my idea that Mbappe to Real Madrid?
No, I don't.
Cristiano,
no,
Messi, and Neymar in the world
I
explodes?
Don't. No, thank you very much. Right. We'll pass on for this summer.
The big derby between Nice and Marseille had to be abandoned on Sunday night following a pitch invasion by Nice supporters. This happened. They were throwing plastic bottles throughout the game. They threw them at Dimitri Payet. Dimitri Payet decided to throw it back into the stands. Probably not.
So it's not just throwing. It's like they actually hit him on the back. And it's quite, you see on the footage, and then we saw the mark on his back, the red mark. It was quite hard, and to the point that he goes a bit on the ground, then gets up, throws the bottle back, then throws a second one. And by then, a few of the Marseille players were there in front of the Populaire Sud, which is the ultra group of Nice, who used to be higher up in the stands at the Allianz Riviera.
The first game back, by the way, at the Allianz Riviera with fans.
And then now, far closer to the pitch, and that's when it created trouble. So then, to respond to the Marseille fans coming towards them, they invaded the pitch, starting fighting, and we saw Luan Perez with a big red mark on his neck. We saw Guendouzi, like hurt or whatever, on the lip. It was chaos. It was so ugly.
Somebody
from
the Marseille bench went and hit a fan very
obviously. Sampaoli's assistant, one of his assistants, with an orange bib. I mean, you could not see it.
I know.
You know, if he didn't camouflage
visible from outer space.
And just went. It was just crazy. And you're thinking, okay, the fans have been out of this game for 18 months. Now they're back. This is a huge derby. Let's say, okay, they hate each other. You know, when I was a kid, the thing was, if you drive your car with a Marseille reg plate to the Nice game, they would burn it. They literally were waiting outside for all the cars with reg plate 13 to burn them. And same for the reverse fixture. So they hate each other, but come on, please. And then the worst, I think, is that the league said, okay, the game can restart now, resume. Marseille players was like, we're not coming back. This is not safe for us. The Marseille president, who already had an altercation in the stands with the Nice kind of hierarchy, said like, my players are not safe. Why would we go back? But then the league said, no, you should go back. So Marseille will lose the game 3-0 instead of the 1-0 score that was at the time. But the precedent is that, okay, now if you're in the lead 1-0 up against PSG or Marseille, send your ultras down, invade the pitch, threaten the opposition's players, and then you're gonna get the win anyway.
I'm assuming that France is a normal country and that you're going to see the Allianz Riviera shut down without fans for a long time.
So. Yeah.
I would assume Nice forfeit the game. So it ends up as a defeat for both.
I know, but technically, the league said the game is resuming.
Right.
If you must.
But I don't understand why they didn't come back out. Because at that point, first of all, the decision for the safety on the pitch, again, I don't know specifics in France, correct me if it's different.
No, but yeah, I'll tell you.
It comes down to the referee, and there's also a match delegate,
yeah,
right?
And the police.
Who liaises with the police, right? Yeah. If the police say it's safe,
yeah,
and the match delegate says it's safe, yeah, and the referee all say it's safe,
yeah,
you have to at least pretend to come out onto the pitch. Yeah. It strikes me that they kind of knew what they were doing when they don't go back out.
But because they were saying, this is not safe. You say it's safe. We're saying it's not safe. Our players just got attacked by your ultras an hour ago.
Yeah.
And now you want us to go back and take that corner in front of the same ultras who attacked our players. It's not safe. We're leaving.
Couldn't they have cleared the fans or tried to? I guess that would have been logistically too difficult.
Maybe, I think, too difficult.
I don't know.
It was crazy. I don't know what's going to happen. I think the win will go to Nice because that the rules, and Marseille left the stadium when they were being waiting on the pitch. But Nice could get points being docked out because of the crowd trouble.
I think they definitely
So they might get 3 points, but then -3 or -2. And I think at least that part of the stadium will be shut down.
I'm assuming there's also going to be bans for players. At least for me, right? I would come down hard on Payet. I would come down hard on Guendouzi. I would come down hard on it's going to be Alvaro, the idiot who boots the ball at the fans into the stands, including the fans who aren't coming onto the pitch, I might add.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jorge Sampaoli, I think we need treatment for him because...
I mean, he was ready to go. He was like, leave it, let me go. I'm going.
If Basil Boli hadn't been there... See, fortunately, there's somebody who's bigger and balder than he is.
Yeah.
Basile Boli.
And Abadonado as well, the former Marseille defender. Too.
That's right. He was a piece of work. Those guys were like the personal security crew.
Yeah. And, he was mad.
But it was ugly. It was ugly.
Yeah, it was really ugly. Manchester United are held by Southampton 1-1, Gab. Is this going to be a bit like last year where they have one amazing performance 1 week, very often against Leeds, and then a bit more disappointing the second week?
I hope not for the sake of United fans. I want to see United actually do well. I want to see these things come together. But so many questions about this game. So many questions that make no sense. Martial, I think, was terrible.
Why did you change the lineup in the first place?
Why don't you play Greenwood up front? He's a center forward. You know. Also, if Donny van de Beek can't play in a game like this, I don't see when he's ever going to play. I thought they could have lost this game. I don't know that they would have necessarily deserved to lose this game.
No, you're right.
But at the end, when Maguire, by the way, nobody's talked about Maguire giving the ball away like that at the end with the Armstrong chance. Show some leadership. You're the captain here. You know, I think they need to go and just take a little look at it, realize where they are. And because Southampton, they're lacking players. They've sold their best players. They're, you know, I love Hasenhüttl, but it's a tough position for them to be in.
This is
not a good performance. Yeah. Now, sticking with that game, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer echoed Jurgen Klopp in complaining about Premier League referees being a little more lax in allowing physical play, saying we'll end up with more injured players. He called Jack Stevens winning the ball from Bruno Fernandes as an example. Does he have a point?
I'm not sure it was a foul on Bruno from Jack Stevens, I have to be honest.
And nobody does.
Yeah. But I mean, Klopp said football will become like wrestling. I mean, come on. I don't think so. Yeah, Burnley were quite aggressive, as they always are.
Right.
There's no surprise there. Far more than Southampton, by the way.
No.
And yeah, I like the idea of flowing. And we saw referee letting the game flow at the Euros. And no one said this is wrestling or boxing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we should all be grown-ups here. Is that?
Yes.
Do you agree? Thank you. Borussia Dortmund fall at Freiburg 2-1. Gab, other than Jude Bellingham, there wasn't so much for Marco Rose to be happy with, right?
No, they had all the bad bits of last year.
Yeah.
They were flat. Freiburg did play really well. Usual defensive errors.
I mean, you've
at
got
the
Witzel
back.
At the back as well. It's like a defense.
Well, and Emre Can and Hummels are on the bench.
Yeah, true.
I don't quite get this.
Jules, more of that goodness that we call quick hits. Manchester City beat up Norwich 5-0 as Gabriel Jesus steals a show. Jules, normal service has resumed.
Of course, Gab, but Norwich were really naive, and it helps if you sit here and you score so early, but at least there was more momentum, dynamism.
It helps when you play Norwich as well.
Movement. Jack Grealish with his first goal, although a bit lucky, I'm not sure you knew much about it, but hey, this is a really good win. And now they've got Arsenal and they can continue like that next weekend. It's Jekyll and Hyde Barcelona, Gab. 1 week they were great against Real Sociedad, and then they were ugly against Athletic Bilbao this weekend. Thank God they've got Memphis Depay.
Memphis Depay saving their bacon. Could have won it, actually. Had another really good chance at the end. The thing is, they just played poorly. Forget the incidents and results. If Iñaki Williams could finish, they would have conceded three. Really, really struggled at the back. Weren't helped when Gerard Pique came off. Eric Garcia, he had a horrendous game. Yeah. Found out that his grandfather had passed before taking the pitch. Maybe that affected him. But I think it's a step back for Koeman. Let's hope this is, if you're a Barca fan, let's hope this is not the real Barca.
Yeah.
Liverpool beat Burnley 2-0 as Harvey Elliott gets his first start in midfield. Jules, I was concerned about the post-Wijnaldum era. Is the 18-year-old Elliott the answer to my worries?
Not sure. That's a lot of pressure to put on him, 18-year-old. But he was good. He was good with the ball in terms of ball progression, carrying the ball. The passing as well was good. It needs more time.
I thought he was more of an attacking player too.
Yeah,
I mean,
at least he played in that position at Blackburn last season in the Championship. He plays as a false nine, he plays as a winger, which I think is more naturally his position, but great talent. And I think he will be part of the rotation, which is already a really good thing for him. Jose Mourinho's Roma began Serie A on a high with a win against Fiorentina 3-1 in a wild game. Gab, and Tammy Abraham is already a hero in Rome.
Yeah, he's on his way to being, well, he can't be the eighth king of Rome because that would be Totti. But he served up 2 assists in this game, plenty of energy.
Yeah.
It was weird because it kind of went downhill because Fiorentina had a player sent off early, the goalkeeper, Drongovski. Then Roma went down to 10 men as well. But they look sharp, and it's the Mourinho effect. He can rally the crowd. Tammy Abraham right now really fits what he wants to do. That is a good sign for Roma.
It is.
Bayern beat Cologne 3-2, but it's hard work. They get booed at halftime. They fail to defend a 2-0 lead at home, eventually winning 3-2 thanks to a scorcher from Serge Gnabry. This wasn't good, Jules.
It wasn't good at all. With the ball, without the ball, even attacking was. I mean, Lewandowski scored, okay, as always, but defensively as well. It was shocking. Nagelsmann tried and brought Kwasi in for his first start, the former PhD youngsters, with Upamecano and Süle. They were terrible.
It was like a hybrid back three where Davies goes forward. Leroy Sané getting booed as well.
Yeah, and being taken off too. It was strange. From Nagelsmann, thank God they won, and you would expect them to still have enough quality to win the game like this, but it might not always be the case. And I was a bit worried and disappointed. Gab, you were so down on Inter because Conte, Lukaku, Hakimi all left. Did they prove you wrong by destroying Genoa 4-0, or is just that Genoa were really terrible, let's be honest?
No, it's Genoa were terrible. Genoa are an incomplete team. They usually are at this stage of the season. Hakan Çalhanoğlu played really well. He often does in August.
Yeah. He scored early, which helps.
He scored early. Look, I think what they showed, which is a positive, is they showed a really good spirit, and they showed a lot of cohesion, like they were unaffected by what happened on the pitch. Mm. Going forward, anybody who argues that this team is as talented as last season, I think is out of their depth. Yeah. Paris Saint-Germain win 4-2 against Brest on Friday night, so all is well, I guess. But Keylor Navas has conceded 6 goals in 3 games, and now Gigi Donnarumma says that while competition is a good thing, he came to be PSG to be number 1 in the world. He needs to be number 1 at PSG first. Is the problem brewing?
But we knew from the beginning, since they signed him, how you're going to deal with the competition between the two Navas, who starts, who doesn't start, who plays in the Champions League, who plays in the domestic cup, all that kind of stuff. We will come to it, but let's enjoy Messi's debut next weekend, right? And Neymar coming back.
Gloss over.
Exactly.
6 goals conceded in 3 games.
Harry Kane make his league debut for Spurs off the bench against Wolves, away at Wolves. And Dele Alli penalty making 6 points out of 6 for Spurs. Gab, does this change anything, the fact that he played the last 20 minutes?
Apparently it does. He's under contract until he moves, so it's fine. I still have no idea how the big Kane mystery is going to be revealed at the end. But I like Dele Alli. He's regenerating Dele Alli. Maybe it's the hair. We already saw a little bit of it last season.
And against City.
Wolves played well. Spurs a little bit lucky, but 6 points. Yeah. Sticking with Spurs, Jules, let's get their fans even more excited. Not only are they top of the Premier League, but... Yeah. And I know. Sorry, I don't even know goal difference. Some Muppet's going to come out and say, hey, goal difference. I don't know. Are they? I presume no, because they have 2-1-0 victories. But you know what? I don't believe in goal difference. Yeah. It's points that matter. To me, okay? So that's it. So shut up. Sorry, I had to get that out of my way. Tell me about Papsar from Metz. Let's get even more excited.
Oh, such a talented player. Gab, he's only 18, so he's very young. Had an amazing breakthrough season in Ligue 1 last season, in midfield, box to box, but so good on the ball, so quick, great vision. I think it's a bargain at 10 million euros.
I'm assuming this is some sort of weird expiring contract situation, that's why?
No, it's not that. It's a bit more technical than that. It's a good question, but it's that when Metz went to see the French Financial Fair Play, if you want, the DNCG, in their account, they had planned for a sell, you know, a 10 million sell from one of their players, whoever that was. I think they would have liked to keep Pape Matsessa for a little bit longer, and I believe he was going to be loaned out by Spurs back to Metz. But he's not worth that. He's worth far more than 10 million. The problem is there's not much left days to go in this transfer window, and Metz have to bring in 10 million to balance their book, basically, which what they promised the French DNCG. So that's why they have to sell him at that price.
So why doesn't somebody come in and offer 11 million, or if it's worth more than that?
Because I don't believe anyone would do that. So now, right now, Spurs, there's other clubs interested, like Manchester City and everything, but people know that Metz need to sell for 10 million.
Right. So they have a deal in place with the agent. So.
And you're in a strong position.
Right.
So, you know, really good piece of business, I have to say, from Paratici. And
okay. Not quite Camavinga, but still good.
No, but still very good. Right. And slightly younger than Camavinga, too. An hour into the game against Venezia, Napoli fans were suffering. Gab, Victor Osimhen had been sent off in the first half. Lorenzo Insigne had missed a penalty. He all settled down then, and they won 2-0. So, Gustavo Luciano Spalletti?
Yeah, I was watching him. And Luciano Spalletti, as you know, is basically Mr. Kurtz from Heart
of
Darkness.
Yeah, he is.
And it did look as if, like, you know, something was going to happen to his head.
He was not happy.
In the end, they got it done. Insigne then took another penalty and converted it. Osimhen was really angry at being sent off.
Do you think he was a bit harsh? It looked harsh to me. I know he makes a gesture, like, you know.
It was harsh. Now, in Serie A, the referees have also said this year, we're going to let more things go, but what we won't let go is dead ball situations, pulling, grabbing, shoving. Fair enough. Like a good tackle or whatever, like, can maybe add to the excitement or the flow. I don't need to see dudes shoving each other or grabbing each other on the set piece. It does not excite me. So maybe that's it. But it is a loss because Osimhen had looked really, really good in training as well. Mm-hmm. Leipzig win the Battle of the American Coaches on Friday night as Jesse Marsch beats my boy Rino Matarazzo Stuttgart. Jules, you love Techers, so I know you want to celebrate Dominik Szoboszlai.
And not just that, but it was good to see him. We had to wait a long time. I mean, the guy signed in January.
Remember when I said, with Szoboszlai, Leipzig are going to win the league last season?
Yeah.
If he had actually played, maybe they would have.
Right. Yeah, and now he's playing, and boy, he played well. That first goal was immense. I mean, we know how good of a ball striker he is, and the way he hits the ball, fantastic. But that first goal was sensational. Then he scores a free kick where he hits it well, and then no one touches it, and it goes in. But maybe the highlight is the sort of Jesse Marsch ball on the second goal from kickoff for the start of the second half, and in the space of 15 seconds and five passes, I think, Leipzig are scoring with Forsberg, an amazing team goal, like collective goal, which was fantastic. And it's good to see because obviously it didn't really start the way Jesse Marsch would have wanted with the defeat against Mainz the weekend before. And now, they were so good, I thought, for the whole game.
Are we underrating them in the race for the Bundesliga?
Maybe. It's just what kind of RB Leipzig you will see. Was it the one against Mainz, who had a lot of the ball, couldn't really do much about it. But Andre Silva scored his first goal, albeit on a pen, but that, for his confidence, would be good. So I think they'd be up there with the others, but it was a really good performance, you have to say. Atletico Madrid make it 2 wins out of 2, Gab, but they need to thank the avenging Angel Correa. Once again, he scored the only 2 goals in the first game. Now he scored the only goal, and obviously some horrendous goalkeeping from Kiko Casilla, the former Leeds goalkeeper.
Just call him Angel of the Wand.
No.
Look, I don't want to pay the rights on that, so that's why I stopped. Diego Simeone made a whole bunch of changes. It was a 3-5-2 with Kondogbia at the back. Luis Suarez was on the bench. And this was not a good performance. Things did not work in this game. And Kiko Casilla, I don't know if he loses the ball in the lights. He just kind of wanders off. The ball comes through to Correa. But, hey, it's another 3 points in the bag.
Exactly.
That's exactly what you need, defending champions.
Exactly.
Atalanta leave it late to beat Torino 2-1 thanks to a goal from Bergamo-born and bred Roberto Piccoli, whose name actually means small, but he's not actually small. Jules, are you with me in thinking they're going to finish top four?
So we talked about Atleti. This was not a good performance for Atalanta either, I thought. But yeah, I think they will be top four. I want to see them doing better and more and challenge for the title. I think in a very open season, if it is as open as we thought it was going to be, I think they have a chance. But I just thought it was a good start because they won, but a bit of a slow start in terms of collective performance.
Yeah, they also have a lot of guys out. I think, other than Romero, I don't think off the top of my head, unless I'm forgetting somebody, they haven't lost anybody necessarily
unless
of note.
Then Zapata might go, but
yeah. He's still there for now. But Piccoli, I think, is a tremendous player. He was at Spezia last year, scored 5 goals, and I love the fact that he's actually from Bergamo.
Yeah, that's good.
They've always had a good youth academy, but it was always people from the villages nearby and stuff. This guy's actually from Bergamo,
from within,
as they call him. So.
Milan make the debut in a few hours. We're recording this on Monday morning, of course, and they play Monday evening. But in the meantime, they signed another big striker, Gab. And it's a good story, but it's a sad story as well, because it's your boy Pietro Pellegrini, who was the one-time 16-year-old, won the kid from Serie A with Genoa back in the years, and had that big move to Monaco for, 25 million euros. Never worked out, too many injuries, and now he's back in Italy with Milan. They're also close of bringing back Bakayoko from Chelsea on loan, and Crotone's Junior Messias, who is a great story, might join too.
Yeah, Junior Messias is a tremendous story. I'm just going to spend a minute on him, because he's a guy who, he didn't play professional football until he was like 25, 26 years old. He's of Brazilian descent, and basically, you know, emigrated to Italy for non-footballing reasons, played in various amateur teams, and then somebody, I think from Torino, said, hey, this guy's actually pretty good.
He
He's an athlete, you know? And was really good last year for Crotone. He's 30 now. That would be a fun story if he comes on board. Bakayoko adds depth. Pellegrini, you tell me at Monaco. People there... I spoke to Michael Emanalo when he was there, when he was in charge. He was convinced that he was an expert.
Yeah, everybody
He's
was.
Only 20 years old.
Oh, yeah, because he broke through so early. And then maybe that move was too early. I don't know what happened, injuries. I don't know if it was down to him, maybe, and his lifestyle, or just the fact that he had a body that was still changing at 16, and he played too early, too young, too much. And that sort of created problems.
He's the same age as Erling Haaland. Can I call him the Italian Haaland, or should I hold off on that?
I mean, he certainly is big and as strong. So
but I'll tell you this, though. If you want to learn from big, strong center forwards, if you want to learn the trade from them,
you're in the right place.
You've got Zlatan and Olivier Giroud. That's pretty good. That's a good finishing school.
That is pretty good.
UEFA will announce their best keeper, defender, midfielder, and forward of the Champions League on Thursday as part of their draw festivities. Now, the award is voted on by the 32 Champions League coaches and select journalists across Europe. It's one per nation. Joseph, for some reason, we weren't invited to vote this year.
So
but
bad.
Should we give our unsolicited opinions anyway?
Of course.
We know the top three vote-getters in each category. We don't know the order. So let's start. Who you got in goal? Your options are Thibaut Courtois, Ederson, or Edouard Mendy.
Okay, so I'm just going to warn you now. I'm going to be very, very biased in all of this, okay?
Okay, well, none of these guys play for Paris Saint-Germain. So.
No, but Edouard Mendy is one of mine, although he plays for Senegal, but he was born in France. He played for Le Havre. I just love the story of someone who, again, had no team 4 years ago, who was not a professional player until really late in his career, had an incredible season with Chelsea, up to the Champions League and winning it as well, clean sheets in the Premier League, and the way he adapted from coming from Ligue 1 to the Premier League is fantastic. Yeah, he doesn't always look maybe the most elegant or everything, but he will learn more, improve even more. I think he's a wonderful story and a wonderful keeper, so I would go with Mendy.
All right, tell you what, out of those three, you said he doesn't always look the most elegant. I would assume, as a person, if they were all to walk in right now, I would argue that Edouard Mendy probably looks like the most elegant and coordinated of the three, simply because Ederson has the weird neck tattoos and Thibaut Courtois looks like somebody put him on a stretcher as a kid. Those are two of my favorite players. I say this. We joke because we love him.
Who would you go for, by the way? Just before I move on to
I got such a soft spot for Courtois, but I think I would go with Mendy as well.
Right, now, Gab, the top three defenders, and your options are Cesar Azpilicueta, Ruben Dias, and Antonio Rudiger.
Okay, so
Without, this is UEFA again. This is not the Premier League.
The Champions League.
Those three are in the Premier League, but this is...
I think without Rudiger, Chelsea do not win the Champions League. I think they might win it without Azpilicueta. And I know it is just the Champions League, but I got to go with Ruben Dias for the completeness of the season, for the stuff that went on around him.
Yeah.
You know, not his fault. So, yeah, I'm going Ruben Dias.
I agree, Ruben Dias. And still so young, let's not forget. And for him to adapt and have that kind of impact straight away on City is pretty impressive.
In midfield, we're looking at Kevin De Bruyne, N'Golo Kante, and Jorginho. Seems straightforward. Surely there can only be one answer, right?
N'Golo Kante. Listen, without N'Golo Kante, Chelsea don't win the Champions League.
But Jorginho, now he changed his hair. He's going to win the Ballon d'Or.
I know he's been great, and I love the story, and I've always liked him, and I never really understood the criticism of him. But N'Golo, NG has to be.
I'm joking. Kante was fantastic down the stretch.
Yeah.
And that's why I would go with Kante. I would just say this about De Bruyne, and we are comparing apples and oranges
there. Yeah, of course. They're not the same profile at all.
De Bruyne is pretty special. If City win it, De Bruyne gets it for me.
Definitely.
And finally, up front, the choice, this is an easy one, is between Erling Haaland, Kylian Mbappe, and Robert Lewandowski.
Wow.
Come on.
I know. I mean, you know I'm going to say Kylian, right? You know I'm going to say Kylian. I should not say Kylian.
You should not say Kylian because that would be silly.
Okay, I'm not saying Kylian then. I tried. Because if you'd been kind to me and said, yeah, okay, I would have pushed for Kylian. Listen, I think Erling Haaland is an amazing talent. So is Kylian Mbappe. And Kylian is obviously my boy. But what Robert Lewandowski did last season, even if Bayern were knocked out by PSG and by Kylian's brilliance, I still think someone scoring 41 goals in a league season.
But it's the Champions League.
I know. This is all in Europe. But he scored. Well, I would give it to Lewandowski.
Yeah, me too. You don't have to justify these things. They come up with screwy solutions anyway. So I'm going to go Lewandowski.
So we agree on everyone, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. That's a way. Which is rare for us.
This is extremely rare. Yeah. This is extremely rare. But, you know, great minds think alike and fools seldom differ. Let's visit the mad, mad, mad world of Peter Bosz. After getting Emerson to join him at Lyon, he has persuaded Jerdan Shaqiri to come on board for 11 million euros. I don't think Danny Drinkwater is next, but this is a good deal for Liverpool, if not Lyon.
Yeah, I think it's good money, considering his contract situation and how rarely he was playing anyway. For Lyon, I think they need someone that can play wide with a bit of leadership, that kind of quality, if he gets back to his best. So let's see. But worst start for Lyon, by the way, in the 21st century after just 2 points in their first three
league games. It's the boss effect. Like a boss.
I know. 20 years ago, Little Chievo wrote a fairy tale in Serie A. Gab, now they don't exist anymore. What do you make of it all?
All right, for those who don't know, it's a tremendous story. Chievo is essentially, it's a little town next to Verona. It's 4,500 people. Mm. It was incredible that they got promoted to Serie A. It was incredible when they played in the Champions League. I mean, they had these away games. It's one game, a away game against Levski Sofia, where I think they literally had six fans following them, and two of them were twins. They became kind of like hip, fun. They kind of stopped being fun a decade ago when all sorts of accounting shenanigans, which is part of the reason why they were kicked out of Serie B. Normally, you're allowed to reform further down. Sergio Pellissier, who, despite the name, isn't actually French.
No, but
their legendary striker tried to put a group together so they could relaunch as a semi-pro club. It's not going to happen. It's sad. It happened. I think this only adds to their legend a little bit.
Yeah.
But football-wise, I don't miss them. Right. That brings us to an end. We got to come back on Thursday, do this again, because it'll be Champions League time around the corner.
Yeah.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.